I want to recognize one of our sponsors. Have you ever felt like a lone wolf in life, unable to engage in chats around the barbecue since you're doing things that aren't the norm? Enter GoBundance, a place where driven entrepreneurs, CEOs, or investors who are beginning to experience an interesting phenomenon with more success in life, the feeling of a gap forming between ourselves and many of the people around us. One day, we wake up and find ourselves surrounded by people who may no longer see the world the same way we do. As the trend continues, we become more isolated and even find ourselves holding back from talking about things we are most excited about with friends, family, or coworkers. GoBundance was created for those who choose to live bigger and more fulfilled lives of impact. This tribe is for men and women who want to experience world-class adventure, bucket list trips, high-minded conversations, authentic relationships, and an environment to learn and grow with like-minded people. GoBundance is a tribe where you are able to share your successes, struggles, ambitions, and failures without being judged. It's a framework to strengthen your journey in becoming a better man, husband, father, friend, and entrepreneur. It is the place men come together to live epic lives and to grab life big. If you want to learn more, go to GoBundance.com and hit the apply button to join the tribe and tell them the Cashflow Ninja sent you. Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. I'm MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for spending the most valuable resource, your time once again with me on the show. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at CashflowNinja.com. That's CashflowNinja.com. Over 850 episodes, tools, resources, programs, and books at CashflowNinja.com. And if you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, you can sign up at CashflowNinja.com/subscribe. I've got a fantastic show for you today. In today's show, I'm joined by Robert Ritzenthaler. He is a real estate investor. Robert, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Pleasure. Absolutely. Yeah, been looking forward to this conversation. Now, for our listeners and viewers that's not familiar with you and what you do, can you share a little bit about your background and journey with us?
Absolutely. So currently the CEO of RM Capital. And we have about 3,500 doors under management scattered around 8 different states. And we kind of focus on the BNC, C2B, BDA class value add space, not unlike a lot of other folks. So find the waters with, kind of the value add space. And really just honestly, our niche is kind of being that sort of a little bit more institutional approach. I've been in the business for on and off 20 years. Started in the corporate world and then stepped over to run REM about 4.5 years ago. So kind of bring that institutional approach, if you will, a little bit more of the retirement safety kind of thing, if you know, somewhere in that range. Still want to give a good return, but that's sort of what we try to do. So it's been a good run the last 4.5 years, hoping to continue. But again, we're kind of more of the Warren Buffett approach. So buy your quality and hang on to it.
Great. Now, your background is in taxes, right? In tax planning.
Well, kind of, yeah. So I actually, going way back, so I actually grew up in the construction business, believe it or not. So my dad was a home builder in Dallas during the boom of the 70s, 80s. Well, it's still booming, in all fairness.
Yeah.
But I grew up in construction. And so, of course, my first job was sweeping the floors. And then, you know, I did the woodwork and all kinds of cool stuff. I thought I was going to take over my dad's business. And he said, absolutely not. It's a terrible business. You're going to go do something else. And of course, back then, you know, he had the SNL crisis and interest rates were sky high. It was just crazy. We have a much better market these days, the last, 10, 15 years. Anyway, so I went off and initially I was going to do a double major, mechanical and electrical engineering, went to Carnegie Mellon, good school, got a scholarship, all that kind of good stuff. And I was about halfway through and I thought, the guys that I'm like in class with, they're going to go on to work for Google and Microsoft. I mean, these people are brilliant. I'm okay. So that's where I said, you know what? I think I'm going to switch over to finance, try it out. Sure enough, it was a really good fit. And then after I graduated, I went to New York City, worked on Wall Street for a little while, realized pretty quickly that most people in that industry are literally on drugs because the stress is astronomical. Didn't feel like that was really the kind of lifestyle that I wanted to live. Nothing, you know, everybody makes their own decisions, but that wasn't for me. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
So, the technology shares, the technology market crashed in 2000. So I had a buddy who told me about some guys that were building a real estate business. He said, come on over here, help us out. So that was kind of the start of my career in commercial multifamily. And we did both office and multifamily. And it was a great time, got mentored by a couple of guys that had been in the business. I think we had about $500 million under management when I started, probably about $1.5 billion when I left. So got to see the growth, helped them build the construction management side of the business. So just had a really cool start in the industry and in New York City, which is, you know, one of the great sandboxes of the world.
Yep.
So that's kind of how things got started. I moved to Tampa, worked for a REIT, managed about $4 billion across a bunch of different markets for them, did a couple small things myself, development projects here and there. And then 4.5 years ago, decided to crank up REM and give it a shot. So that's the long and short of it.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Now, what type of, what's your philosophical approach? You've shared the Buffett approach, you know, find great assets of value and hang on to them. What are some of the other things from an investing and a philosophical approach to investing that kind of are the cornerstones of how you approach things?
Sure, sure. And actually, you know, you mentioned Warren Buffett. It's kind of funny how things come full circle. So I started investing in mutual funds when I was 13, took my savings and just started dumping it in. I mean, that was back when you had to go to the library and get the Morningstar book that was, you know, 3 inches thick.
Yeah,
I was one of those weird people. But I remember reading about Buffett and really digging into his investment philosophy. Of course, you know, who doesn't if you like that world? And I never really thought I would apply it in multifamily. I always thought real estate's over here, investing's over here. And it was really in the last probably 10 years where I thought, wait a minute, real estate and multifamily is just like buying a business. It's a small business. It has staff. It has a P&L. I mean, literally you're buying a business. It's like M&A. And so you think about it from that perspective, you start to say, okay, so let's apply those same principles of cash flow, stress testing, you know, long-term debt, et cetera, et cetera. Boom. Now you have a great model. So I would say, you know, that sort of overarching theme, in addition to being very diligent in what we do, is something that I think kind of you put the two together. And I think that's really kind of the cornerstone of what we'd like to do. In addition to that, I will say though, I think it's super important just in general to be conservative because, I mean, the market's been phenomenal for a long time. So for us, for me in particular, it was kind of one of those things where, look, if we're going to do this, I don't want to have to start all over. And at the same time, I'm not a market timer. So I don't know when we're going to stop, if we're going to keep going for another 20 years. You look at a market like Toronto, my wife's from Toronto. I mean, that market has just kept going and going and going. It just never took a dip. So you just don't know. And yet at the same time, you don't want to be on the sidelines because you're going to miss out. So the approach has just been, let's be diligent. Let's look at the data. Let's make sure we know what we're doing. And then I would say the other component, which we added about 2 years ago, was the property management side of it, where we brought it all in-house. And now we're building out the construction side of it too. So we've really got the ability to control the execution of the business plan. And for me, that's key. So yeah, I would say, you know, I think being conservative, having a long-term approach, and utilizing a lot of that experience from the past is really big when it comes to achieving what we're trying to do, which is a little bit more protection of capital, obviously get a good return. But the goal is, hey, how do we protect that capital more than anything else? Because you just never know. The market might turn tomorrow and, you know, okay, so maybe my distributions go from 10% down to 5. But guess what? I didn't lose my capital. Pretty important.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. One of the best cash flow niches might surprise you. It's the cash flow machine called Resort Hospitality. Our friends and partners, Melanie and Josh McCallan from Accountable Equity, are so prolific at creating cash flow for their investors that I had to include them twice in my book, The 21 Best Cashflow Niches. Something that really impresses me about this dynamic group is that more than just creating cash flow with these historic trophy resort properties, they are also creating a powerful investor community with an accountable equity. Investors not only get to enjoy cash flow from beautiful resorts, but can enjoy the resorts and attend Learn and Grow investor summits where like-minded accredited investors gather to learn from keynote speakers, as well as get updates on their projects and meet the growing team that makes all of this possible. You can learn more how the asset class of resort hospitality is a great way to diversify your multifamily investments by downloading the ebook, The 10 Steps to Build Wealth with Resort Hospitality Assets at accountableequity.com. Now, for our listeners and viewers that might wonder this just from an educational standpoint too, what value does that bring to bring in-house your property management and also have in-house construction management?
Yeah. I mean, some people would say you're crazy for doing that. Who wants to be in property management? Who wants to, the tenants in the toilets, right? Everybody's like, get out of that business. And I think on a smaller scale, that is, I would say, more true. But it's very interesting because I just read an interesting report in the NAA magazine that comes out, I don't know, every month, every quarter, whatever it is. And they did a survey. And they surveyed large institutions with third-party management, smaller groups that had third-party, middle-sized groups that did their own management, lots of different groups. And it's very interesting. The mid to large-sized groups that had their own property management were the most focused on the use of technology, efficiently, making sure that their value-add services were front and center with their residents, adjusting payroll, things of that nature. So I do think to some degree, if you really take it on as a core piece of your business and you just love it, I think there's some pretty cool things that you can do. And I think there are guys that are doing it like us, where you're kind of reinventing the wheel, if you will, to adjust to the times. I just feel like from a control of execution standpoint, it's almost a no-brainer. You know, we run it as basically a break-even operation. It's not a profit center. So my thought is make sure to take all that money, hire really good people, give them the runway to do what they want to do and get done what they need to get done. And then where we really make our money is in the asset, actually, from buying it right, selling it right, the cash flow, that kind of thing. So I love it. It doesn't bother me, the tenants and toilets part of it, because I think that's the nuts and bolts of it. And, if you're going to be in this business, I think you got to love it.
and it enhances operational efficiencies, which contributes in the end to the value of the asset. And having that alignment between property management and, of course, the acquisition side of the business from an execution standpoint is huge, right? Because there's alignment across the board.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about construction management too, and I think it's the same kind of thing. Construction management to me is a little bit of an easier numbers scenario because you will save money doing your own construction. So that, that makes it a little bit easier. But then you think about, okay, if I'm going to spend $5,000 a door, I'm going to get the equivalent of maybe a $10,000 a door look. What's that worth? I mean, that's worth millions. We were in one of our assets in Dallas not too long ago, and I walked in there and they hadn't told me exactly what they'd done. I walked in, I'm like, okay, wait a minute, guys, how much did we spend on this? Because it looked gorgeous. And I was thinking, maybe we spent 10 grand. All right, it's a demo unit. Okay, I'll let you off the hook, whatever. They're like, no, it's $5,200. I mean, my jaw just dropped. For the look that they got with that, unbelievable. So, yeah, I'm a huge proponent of the construction side of it, too. The challenge, though, in this market, which I'm sure is finding good people, both property management and construction. I mean, that is the limiting factor right now for everything that we're doing. So needless to say, putting a lot of attention and focus on that, but it's a key part of the business. So
yeah, absolutely. Now, what markets are you guys looking at for opportunities in the United States and what makes those markets attractive?
So we look at, in a big sense, the Midwest, Southeast, and Texas. Not necessarily earth-shattering, more of a, 2 to 2.5 hour plane flight for me so I can get there, get back. You know, maybe that's a little selfish. They're good markets though too. So Midwest for us is our hub is Cincinnati. So Cincinnati, Columbus, Indianapolis is another market. We have not bought anything in Indianapolis yet, but those three markets are kind of like our Midwest hub, if you will. The nice thing about the Midwest is that you've got the cash flow. You got a little bit of a yield play there that you don't have in the Southeast and Texas. And if you know how to do it right, you know how to buy it right, you know the neighborhoods to buy, you're going to get some nice upside. So that's our Midwest thesis. Southeast and Texas, I think, are to some degree a little bit of a no-brainer. I mean, everybody's moving there and the jobs are great, you know, so it's a great area to be. I like the Southeast and Texas because I think you've got a little bit more manufacturing in the Southeast, although Texas is definitely picking up quite a bit there. You've got a lot of people coming from California to Texas. Texas is just a growth state. So those are kind of the other two areas, you know, for us, Atlanta, Charlotte. We've got a couple assets in Augusta, Georgia, a little bit of a smaller market, has a big cyber command center down there. So you got some technology jobs, cool stuff happening there. And then, of course, Texas, you know, Dallas, San Antonio, Houston, great markets. Haven't done anything in Austin yet. Austin's a little bit like Florida. The pricing is just completely nuts. But I mean, I know some guys that are doing deals there, so I'm sure they've figured it out, but I think the risk point is a little bit higher. So again, for us, we're a little bit more sensitive to the cash flow going into it, just like that fudge factor. But yeah, so those are the states that we're in right now. We want to get into Chattanooga, Nashville. I love Tennessee. It's a great market too. Knoxville even. Haven't found anything yet, but yeah, I think we're in seven or eight states, something like that. So, you know, and landlord friendly laws too. I mean, that's a key component. I would definitely say that. I think that's, especially over the last couple of years with the pandemic. Yeah. And even some of the states that are more landlord friendly, sometimes you get judges that just say, you know what? I don't care. You're a landlord. You're a bad person. You know, it's frustrating, but that's definitely become a more important aspect. I mean, it always was, but you go through something like a pandemic and it just really sort of brings it to the forefront. So we definitely focus on areas that are, you know, more, if you sign a rent agreement, you need to pay your rent type of scenario. We're not trying to be mean, but hey, come on, we had an agreement here. Let's do it.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you can share since 2020 and 2020, 21 and so forth from an operational success that was implemented and executed? Because it was obviously challenging times for everyone across the board, right? But what were some of the things that you could look at from a success standpoint from implementation and execution?
Yeah, I think probably the number one progress or improvement, maybe it's a better word, that we made was on the pre-qualification for a resident. And I think we'd always been pretty good at it, but you go through a situation like that and you really become good at it because it's like life or death. You get the wrong person in and you just blew 12 months of $0 coming in the door type of scenario.
Yep.
So that was the big thing that we focused on, did quite a bit of training, quite a bit of mentoring, just making sure that everybody really understood, hey, almost breaking it down to the basics of, would you, you know, if you live next door to this person, would you be okay with that? And if you have a hesitation, just think about it, you know, and of course we got to play within the fair housing and all that stuff. So I'm not trying to say we're profiling, but you know, it's kind of like, hey, make sure the people you bring into this complex, they're decent, good rent paying people, because that's our lifeblood. And if they don't pay, like we're all out of business. Yep. So I think there were some things that we did to kind of tweak that process. We, I forget the name of the program we added that was a kind of a background check, credit check service. I think it's called Checkpoint, that allowed us to check for, you know, just kind of a wider range of making sure your ID is good, making sure your credit check is good, checking for evictions, that kind of stuff. So there's definitely some tightening up on that process and that helped. And I think between the kind of the technical side as well as the training, we saw a tremendous turnaround. And even the properties where we bought in the last year and a half, where they had a tremendous amount of delinquency and just massive cash flow issues, within 3 to 6 months, literally closed the door and the cash flow started to go up. And I mean, kudos to the team that we've just had some real rock stars. So, yeah. it's been fun to watch. I'll tell you that much.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. My friend Dave Zook says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy. Pick one. At The Real Asset Investor, Dave and his team bring their investors high-yield investment opportunities across several asset classes for cash flow, tax impact, and equity growth. He and his team are one of the top five ATM operators in the country, and they have an investment opportunity available to accredited investors right now in the ATM space. To learn more about their ATM funds that produce tax-free cash flow, visit therealassetinvestor.com. And the being proactive too was huge during those times well, right? Communications and just staying on top of everything.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I didn't think about the fact when it came to just collecting rent and establishing rapport and, you know, for better or worse, we did a survey kind of post-pandemic. About 75% of the people that didn't pay rent couldn't qualify for assistance. So you know what that means. They were making enough money the entire time. They just didn't want to pay their rent.
Yep.
You know, and it, you know, I don't agree with that. But the point is, at the same time, I felt like building rapport with those residents and kind of saying, hey, come on, you know, pay your rent, get us something, get a payment plan, some sort of thing going, that helped. And then also working with the legal system in a productive way to make sure that, you know, hey, if you're going to be here, then you've got to follow the rules. You got to get assistance, that kind of thing. We made calls for residents, probably hundreds, if not thousands of calls for our residents to get them assistance. So kind of went out of our way to make sure that they were helped. We were helped, you know, it's a win-win. But yeah, you're right. It was definitely an all hands on deck, time period. And I feel like we're still a little bit there.
Yep.
Because, you know, some of those child tax credits phased out at the end of last year. So people aren't getting as much sort of money in the bank, so to speak. So there's been a little bit of, you know, ripples going through the system. Not so much at the A level, I think, but you know, your workforce housing folks, they feel that. So I think it's going to continue for a while. As you know, the economy is good, but you know, there's some headwinds out there too. So we're keeping our vigilance. That's for sure.
Absolutely. What does a good deal look like now for you? You were saying that you're still looking around and still trying to find some good deals. What does a good deal at this time of the cycle essentially look like for you?
Yeah. So I would say if you would ask me 2 years ago, you have to get an off-market deal to get a decent deal. I would have said, no, that's just not true. Come on, give me a break. If you ask me today, I would pretty much tell you, yeah. If it's going through the marketing process and you have 40,000 people offering on it, don't even waste my time. And actually, when we were at NMHC in January, you know, I got a group of whatever, a couple dozen brokers that I really like and work with. And I kind of had the same message as them. I said, look, I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but you know, we have to go through a lot of deals to find these. And I'm working on all these deals and then we're getting to the best and final. And it goes from 60 million to like 72, not 60 to 62, 60 to 70, you know, it's like, forget it.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of guys were in the same situation and there's kind of been a little bit of a bifurcation where those of us who really have to run a business and really have to be disciplined about our approach kind of said, look, we've got to have a smaller group that's in the best and final, guys that are really focused on the cash flow. And, you know, you're kind of down to that last couple thousand and it's based on who you know or your execution or something like that, you know, relationship based. So we have definitely focused more on that. But that being said, I think there's been some good opportunities because there's been some people that have backed out of the market because they're a little concerned about interest rates, the economy, et cetera, whatever it may be. And of course, I've had people ask me, well, wait a minute, why aren't you guys backing out of the market? My answer to that is when I look at the data, I don't think that we're headed into some massive recession. Now that could change, you know, in the next 3 to 6, 12 months, but right now I don't see that. So again, if you're stress testing your deal like we do down to, you know, 70, 75% occupancy, we can withstand a recession. I mean, a bad one, and we're still going to make it through. So then you look at the other side, which says, all right, let's just assume I park my money on the sidelines. I wait. What if I'm wrong? I wait. What if I break even? Well, inflation just burned up 8%, right? Where are we at? 8.3% on average. Yep. So, you know, my philosophy is more know what you're doing, make sure to do your homework and keep investing, and just make sure you have fudge factor in your deals. So, you know, stress testing, working capital, whatever it is, all those kind of things go into it. And that's our approach. So we're still finding deals, and I think they're few and far between, which isn't really new. But, you know, they're out there. And I think, you know, again, you get a little bit of economies of scale. So if you're in a market and you add another one and another one, now you got a little bit of economies of scale there. You know, you've got a maintenance guy that can rotate. So now all of a sudden, maybe your payroll, you got a little more flexibility. We're actually just getting to the size where we can start to get some economies of scale in our insurance program. In the beginning, you know, it's one off here, here, here. We're finally to that point. I mean, insurance is killing everybody. It's terrible. I'm really thankful we're at a point where we can start to get some of those efficiencies back. And this year will be our first year to do that. So again, you know, a little bit of a competitive advantage. Just, you know, I mean, you look at like the, I don't know, Kentucky Derby or something. I mean, sometimes those horses win by like a razor, you know, it's just such a thin margin. So that's kind of what we look at. Hey, save a little here, save a little there. And if we can get the deal, we've got the fudge factor to do it, then let's roll forward. So anyway, that's kind of our approach. And, you know, it's working. We're not trying to close 40 deals every month. If we can get, you know, one or two a quarter, we're happy. So.
Right. Yeah. Cash flow recovery is huge, right? As far as just overall operational enhancement and increase of the value of the asset eventually. So it all is connected.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's a big deal. And that's why I say too, I think finding deals that cash flow are difficult, but they're still out there. And that's kind of our sticking point. If we can't get it to cash flow, it just, you know, there's only so far I can go. And I can't pencil my deal down to a 70% occupancy if it cash flows at, you know, 2% out of the gate. It just won't work.
Yep.
We'll be in the red. So try to stay away from those deals. Especially right now. I would say that's maybe one thing that's changed. A year and a half, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I was more willing to do those deals, betting that, you know what, the economy's fine, blah, 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 we'll work our way out of it. Now I'm a little bit more hesitant in that respect. Because I say, yeah, what if it goes into recession? What if it's 2 to 3 to 4 years before we pull out and we're burning cash during that time period? Not really a scenario I'd prefer to be in. We'd probably survive. We wouldn't risk our capital, but not the best scenario. So we try to be, you know, pretty particular about that from a cash flow standpoint.
Absolutely. Now, some of the dangers you've alluded to is the economy. And then obviously inflation, mm-hmm. which is a big theme, and interest rates.
Yep.
What are maybe if you want to speak to a couple more of those from a danger or threat standpoint, and are there any other dangers or threats that you're currently seeing?
Yeah, I mean, those are kind of the obvious ones, but I would say the job market is the main driver, if you will, that I'm always watching. Because again, multifamily is driven by jobs. So to me, the job market is the key element. And I'm watching consumer spending right now. It's still going up. That's a good sign. People still have a lot of money out there. I saw a statistic where there's something like $2.3 trillion that's still sitting out there from the pandemic era savings. You know, people couldn't go out. They couldn't do anything.
Yep.
So the money just kind of built up in their savings account. So it's there and it's going to get spent because, hey, this is America. We don't save, we spend.
Yep.
But, you know, so I kind of look at that and I'm like, all right. So we've got some savings. We've got a good job market. Unemployment's still low. You still have tons of hiring signs pretty much all around the country. So, you know, that's a good sign too. So I'm not seeing a situation where the job market is falling apart. But if that did start to fall apart, then that would definitely change my perspective on things. But I don't see that happening. And I'm very encouraged by the fact that wages have gone up during this pandemic timeframe. That was actually probably my biggest concern prior to this. Rents were going up, but wages were not keeping up, not even close. Now, rents are still going up faster than wages, but I think psychologically, we're at a better place. And I think percentage-wise, too. So I'm actually a huge proponent for, you know, I don't necessarily support federally mandated wage minimums and whatnot, although, you know, sometimes you have to. But I love what Amazon has done. And they said, hey, we're going to bump to 15. We're going to bump to 18. I think those kind of things are key. And it's helped them attract the right kind of labor force. And I believe the other day, from what I understand, they are pretty much fully staffed. So they led the, you know, they led the curve on getting wages up. And, you know, it's affected all of us. I mean, we're paying more for our maintenance guys, for our staff, for everything, but people have to be able to pay for the rent. So if I'm going to jack your rent $500, you got to make more. So, yep. I'm in favor of that. I think it's worked out well so far. And I know people complain because they're thinking, hey, my pay just went up $5,000. I get to pocket all of that. Well, no, not quite.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're in the same boat. You know, our rent goes up, but our insurance goes up. Taxes go up. Wages go up, you know. So it's kind of a moot point to some degree. But I don't see a tremendous imbalance. And that's where I feel like it's something to watch for sure. But I don't think that it's, you know, we're on the edge of a cliff and the market's going to fall apart tomorrow. So
absolutely. I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Producers Wealth. If you're interested to set up your infinite banking policy correctly and have access to a coach that will help you use your infinite banking strategy to grow your business and your investment portfolio, and having your capital work in more than one place simultaneously and protect your capital from market downturns, taxes, predators, and creditors, you can watch a presentation of exactly how you can do this at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com. And then tying into that, away from the dangers, what are some of the things that excite you right now? Some of the biggest opportunities that you're seeing at this time?
Well, I would say that, I guess a couple things. One is we just broke ground on our first new development deal. And I've had some people, same thing. Why would you do that in the middle of a situation like this? Well, two reasons. One, my thought was our construction costs will probably moderate a little bit if there's a recession. And again, if you're holding this for 10 years and you have a window of 1 or 2 years of a recession, that's kind of lucky timing to some degree. So, you know, and somebody may say, well, but what about the lease up, that kind of thing? Okay, sure. You know, we might have to work a little harder to lease it up, but construction costs, I mean, you're stuck with that for the next however long you own it. So we've already seen a little bit of a benefit from costs coming down a little bit in the last few months, lumber in particular. So our thesis on the new development side is if you go out and try to buy an A-class right now, you're paying above replacement costs in a lot of cases. So why not go build it, own it? You've got equity built into it and you've got an A-class asset, balance out the portfolio, which is mostly BNC assets. So I see a tremendous opportunity right now for new development for us, where we can go into a market that, you know, not in Austin, but like we're in San Antonio. San Antonio to me is kind of that, you know, it's a little bit more of a workforce. It's an up and coming market. Just got I think CoStar mentioned that it's like the top growth city in the country from population. I mean, unbelievable. So, you know, you get things of those kind of drivers that are coming into a market like that. So I think that's a cool opportunity. So we're excited about that. And then the other opportunity that I'm seeing is going back to what I was saying earlier, some investors have decided to step on the sidelines because of the uncertainty. And so again, we're able to now, let's say there was 20 people at the table a year ago. Now maybe there's 10. So, you know, our odds literally doubled that we could get that deal. And again, as long as we're keeping our underwriting in the right spot and we're adjusting for rates, et cetera, it's the same, you know, the same scenario that it was a year ago. There's just fewer people fighting for it. So it's kind of an opportunity in that sense. I see a couple of cool things, and I don't know. I feel like there could be a window here in the next 6 to 12 months for us where we might actually do a little better. And, you know, if the economy comes out and the rates come back down, we're going to be back, you know, playing the same game with 42,000 people, but it's okay, you know. But I actually feel like right now it could be a really good opportunity, so I'm excited.
Fantastic. One habit I've observed from wealthy and successful folks is that they're always studying, they're always learning. What are some of the things that you're studying and learning right now?
Well, I have a pretty consistent habit of reading the Wall Street Journal. I know that's not rocket science, but I'm a big fan. And not only just the local and kind of economic news, but just big picture stuff too, just kind of understanding China, how that's affecting lockdowns and our supply chain and things of that nature. So I'm always learning a lot there. I really appreciate their technical, unbiased writing. I really appreciate that for the most part. And then the other thing I really enjoy is our industry publications, like the NAA has a publication they put out. I like to stay up on the latest with technology and sort of some of the things that other folks are doing in our industry to make the business more efficient and to also make it more attractive to residents, to, and really honestly, even more so to employees. Because again, right now, that's our biggest challenge is bringing employees in. So those are a couple things that I'm constantly reading a lot. Outside of that, there's a phenomenal book that I read probably a year ago now, but I've actually gone back to it several times, and it's called Leadership in Turbulent Times, written by a lady who's a phenomenal historian. But she basically documents, I think it's Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, FDR, and Johnson. And, you know, of course, different leadership styles, different ways they got there, but just a really cool, not a documentary, a biography, I guess, on their leadership styles, what worked, what didn't work, and then during turbulent times. And it's, I've walked away with some pretty, you know, I felt like some good ideas on, hey, when things get a little crazy, here's what you got to do as a leader. And I think a lot of us have faced that over the last 2-3 years. Yep. I know when the pandemic broke out, people were calling me kind of like, oh my gosh, are you going to shut off the distributions? Is the company going to be okay? You know, there's a lot of questions. And so, I think I had recorded a video or something and I kind of laid out, hey, here's what I'm seeing. Here's what we plan to do. Here's why I think we're going to be okay. Ended up, that was kind of the situation. But, you know, just taking some of those opportunities to provide good leadership and, you know, it was helpful. So anyway, hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah, absolutely. What are some of the interesting developments that you're seeing with regards to technology in real estate?
A couple interesting things. So we are working on a plan to essentially automate our AP. So at the property management level. And it really stems from an overarching desire to free up our on-site staff to do what only they can do, which is that resident connection, that, you know, rapport, that being there for them. When it comes to, you know, doing an invoice, anybody could do that. That you could be in, you know, here in Tampa, you could be in Singapore. It doesn't really matter. So we're really trying to offload a lot of those sort of quote unquote non-value add services to automation or lower cost or offshoring or something like that. That's something we're in the process of doing right now. And again, the idea is more time for our frontline folks to really focus on the resident relationship, which is key. So that's one thing. The second thing we're doing is on the kind of the back end of a lot of the projects that we're running, we're taking a look at how can we better analyze the ROI, not just from a dollars and cents standpoint, but from a resident sort of reception standpoint. So and I guess I'd say projects, but also R&M. So one of the things, again, we're setting up a process where if somebody puts in a work order or somebody rents an apartment, they're going to get a follow-up call from us, basically doing a survey. Hey, how'd you like about it? Is everything okay? You know, are we performing at your expectations? And taking that as a full feedback loop back into the property management side of things, but also being able to look at it from a corporate level. Because sometimes those things can get sort of in a loop at the property level and they stay there and you never know there's problems building up. You know, you see a Google review, but let's be honest, a lot of Google reviews are just residents that are ticked because they were made to pay their rent. So you can't always have that. So we've been using technology more to really try to hone in on how can we provide a better service for our residents, a better, you know, quality of construction, et cetera, et cetera. You know, or even just even small things like what style do they like? Yeah. And we started doing a modern farmhouse style on a, you know, a workforce housing C property that we bought. And, you know, the team came to me and they said, hey, here's what we're thinking of doing. And I thought, okay, I've never seen that done before, but you know what? It's unique. It's different. Go for it. Unbelievable response. I mean, people are just falling over themselves because it's different. It's cool. It looks great. Yep. You know, so I think again, trying to do something that's a little bit unique, doesn't need to break the mold, but just take what we've got, tweak it just a little bit, provide that extra value. set yourself apart in the market. And, you know, and those are the kind of things too, that if we do go into recession, that'll help us to stay a little ahead of the curve, versus our competition. And I mean, hey, we're all friends in this business, but it is a competition. So it's a friendly competition, but you know, it's like, hey, if I'm playing, I'm playing to win.
There you go. There you go. And we, on the show, we talk a lot about business. We talk a lot about investing and of course, cash flow. But we also talk a lot about principles and value and living and leaving a legacy. So if you cannot pass on any money to future generations, but we're only allowed to pass on three principles and values to the future generations to help them achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
Well, I think number one, and this hits me, so I, you know, I'm talking to myself here, but I think number one, time is something that you can never take back and you can never add. Yep. So if there's one thing that you could pass on, in my opinion, it's time. And that is actually kind of a theme for me in 2022 in particular, because when I started REM, I had a conversation with my wife and I said, look, you know, a startup, it's a lot of work. So I'm going to need 5 years. And basically the end of this year is the end of that 5 years. So I am dead set that I've got to get my sort of work-life balance, if you will, back in line, because time is something that you just cannot, you know, to me, that's the most important thing. Yep. And I've got a wonderful wife, got a wonderful family, love them very much. Obviously, you know, all the money in the world doesn't equal their relationship. So I think that's always the thing that I say. Number one is time. And I think if you focus on that, a lot of other things come into play. But I would say too, outside of that, time, but then also I think your character, hopefully you can pass on something of value, but character to me is super, super important. And we talk about that internally where, you know, when we look at employee, it's simple. You want character and competence. I mean, you know, we can break down both of those into much more sort of subcategories, but character is just unbelievably important. So being able to look for that in employees, being able to pass that on to my kids, being able to be a leader who has good character, just super important. So I think that's something that I would say is sort of number two. Number three, which I guess kind of goes along with number one and two, is servant leadership. We talk about that a lot. In fact, it's funny because I do a weekly blog post and somebody mentioned that, like, oh, you've written about this two or three other times. But it's just something that I really am passionate about where, you know, it's not the I'm at the top. Let me grab everything I can get and use everybody to get what I want to achieve my goal. It's more, hey, I've been given this position and this, you know, experience and maybe even a good mind for real estate so that I can give back, so that I can provide opportunities to other people. And that's something that I really drive home internally. And I think we've got a lot of people that carry that vision and that mission to raise people up. One of the cool things that we're working on right now, it's not done yet, but we're creating essentially like a fund, like almost like a 401k, so that our employees at any level can invest in the deals that we're doing. So, you know, you're talking about a maintenance guy who maybe hasn't even ever thought about investing in a stock or anything. Now he's actually technically a part owner in that asset. I just think that's incredibly transformational. So, you know, again, that kind of comes back to the servant leadership. If I needed the extra $10 or $100 or $1,000, I would never think that way. But to me, it's like, look, I don't need a big jet. I don't need a 50,000 square foot house. That's ridiculous. So I'm going to take that and I'm going to work on ways to give back and to, you know, make sure other people have an opportunity. So anyway, the time, character, and servant leadership, I would say are three very important things.
So. Those are fantastic. Thank you for sharing them. Robert, where can folks learn more about you and your company and what you do, and where can they follow you and your company and stay informed of all the many projects that that you're involved with?
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, feel free to email me, robert@rmcapital. Happy to chat anytime. But of course, our website, remcapital.com, we have, you know, the usual Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, all that good stuff. But yeah, if folks go to our website, we've got a little banner at the top for getting updates. I send out a weekly CEO blog, try to keep it interesting and short. But yeah, I would love to connect with anybody that's interested and see if it's a good fit for them.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey and all of your knowledge and providing so much value for my listeners and my viewers.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you. My pleasure.
And thank you so much for spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me. All the listeners and all of the viewers out there, appreciate you all. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. We have podcasts, we have tools, we have resources, we have programs and books, all at cashflowninja.com. And don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at cashflowninja.com/subscribe. I personally write these emails that will be sent out to you on a weekly basis, keeping you up to date with everything that's happening at cashflowninja.com. Until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.